Welcome back to Batch Sizes.
All right.
We have a little pause there as we move in. But let's take a look at batch sizes. And it's a corollary to WIP limits. So WIP limits are kind of the number of things we're working on. Batch sizes is how big are the things. And that Mary Poppendick thing that you laid out, I think, really lays it out. Focus on WIP limits. Then focus on batch sizes as you move forward. So let's hit some of the batch size stuff.
One of the other things I want to call out here is that WIP limits and batch sizes are both relative to your level in the organization, right? So what is a WIP limit at the team level is not the items that are under a WIP limit at the team level make up a batch at the level above the team level, right? So these things are all relative to where your view is at the organizational level. It's just a little thing to keep
in mind. Yeah, that's a great point.
It scales up and down the chain.
So large batches generally optimize for individual efficiency over the cost of cycle time.
Right.
So you want your individuals to be efficient. Now, if you were to convince me, which it's yet to happen, that you know exactly what the customers want with perfect certainty and you don't need to ask them, and there is no value to developers ever speaking with testers because the testers are only validating code that is absolutely perfect.
Well, then you should fire them.
Then you don't need the testers, I suppose, right? But that's about the only time that you're going to convince me that you should do a full phase gate waterfall approach where you have absolutely perfect certainty that no bugs will be ever created, that no analysis mistakes will ever be made, that your domain will not change, and that you fully 100% understand exactly what your customers want and need. The chances of that approximate zero.
They are zero.
They are zero.
let's be honest, it doesn't happen.
Therefore, you don't want to have at least giant steps in your system with phase gates. You may, however, have larger batch sizes than smaller ones.
Right.
And this is a trade-off. There's this, people new to Lean will often have this idea of single piece flow. I guess this is not quite a batch size thing, but it's kind of correlated. It's we want to work on something small and then but only one thing at a time and never have a backlog or a queue. That's probably not realistic.
It's also not economically optimum.
It's not economically optimal. I have trash in my house. I don't take my trash and expect to carry it to the dump every time I want to move a small trash bag out. Right. I accumulate it into a larger batch size in my trash can, and then the city comes and moves it away in even larger batch sizes to take it to the dump. It's just there's an optimal trade-off.
Right.
So we don't want you to become overwhelmed here and say you have to get to the smallest possible batch size. No, right. it's an economic trade-off.
A good example of that is the Scaled Agile framework and the way they lay out their release train with their teams working in two-week sprints. So you have your release train that's working in three-month iterations, and you have your teams that are working in two-week iterations. So you're batching work at the level that is appropriate for that scale of the organization, whether or not that's always appropriate for every organization is debatable, but it gives you an idea of how you can scale your batch size as appropriate to the level of the organization. Similar to I have a small trash can, I put it, and they take away a larger trash can. It's the same concept.
Yeah, except in our domain, which is a more appropriate analogy. Back to the penny game again. Just the three lessons learned: when we reduced the batch sizes, we dramatically reduced the cycle times, and we also got accelerated feedback. And we talked about dropping in a quarter on that, as well as just quality control with one is much better. And it increased our agility. People were able to respond to that, and Pete was able to hand things to Matt differently. Or was it Matt to Pete? I'm not sure.
I don't remember which way it was.
Passing back and forth. Matt to Pete, they were able to change that. And I think that's fantastic.
Right.
Yeah. So let's take a look at this graph. And this cycle time is a function kind of utilization and batch size. And if we take a look at that, large batches, same thing with high variability.
Right. Yep.
Right? This is our cycle time and utilization chart.
We could do seven different matrices across this, right? And we end up with somewhat of the same thing. Bottom line, control your whip limits, reduce your bat sizes, and you'll decrease your cycle times.
Right.
That really is the bottom line, right? That's what we need to be shooting for. As we see, this just kind of pans it out quite nicely.
It does. I think this is an excellent layout.
Trying to figure out something to say that adds more value than the graph itself, but I think you could just kind of look at it and go, all right,
yep.
I think I want a smaller batch. Let me call out one thing here. So with the smaller batches, you can load to higher levels of utilization without overly affecting your cycle time. So if you're really worried about the fact that you don't want developers sitting around for 20% of their time, drastically reduce batch sizes, and you can load to 90% and get the same cycle time.
Oh, I love that. Absolutely. And I think it's a case where developers aren't going to be pushing back against that 90% utilization from AD because they're getting that faster delivery. They're getting a cadence where they can deliver yep. faster. You're right. There's not much to add to this slide. I'm going to take that same slide then and come back to a cafeteria's discussion and possibly QA. You've all probably worked in an organization that had a cafeteria, or you went to school that had a cafeteria. I often see this happen. You would see it happen. Everybody goes to lunch at noon. If it was mandated, everyone in the company, you have from noon to one off, and they break it for noon, and they go to the cafeteria. They're going to have a giant line, large queues, lots of wasted time while people wait for their food. So the natural response from people is, build a bigger cafeteria. Let's have more
cafeterias.
Or a second
one. Double our cafeterias.
Exactly. Double the size of the cafeteria. Now we'll get through faster. Yeah, you sure will. But an easier way would be to batch it. Say, you know what? Lunch starts at 11 to 12 for a subset of people, 11:30 to 12:30 for another subset, and 12 to 1 for the third. Now you've broken it up into three, and you may find that the same level of resources is all it takes to serve everyone happily. In other words, planning for peak load is something that you may have to do at some point theoretically, but in reality, if you can figure out a way to pull down the peaks, you're better off, and we do that through batch sizing. Now, why does this apply to QA?
So it's the same sort of concept where if we've got phase-gated development cycle and we dump 70 units on QA all at once, and then we scream, oh, QA can't get anything done on time. Why isn't QA faster? We need to hire 500 more QA personnel. It's the exact same concept. And we usually hear it in organizations, almost everybody we've ever been to says, we don't have enough QA people to actually go through all our testing. Shrink your batch sizes, deliver to QA more often, and you'll probably find out that you actually do have enough QA. You're just dumping way too big of batches on them all at once.
I think that's perfectly said. It's a lot of times it's a batch size problem, not a capacity problem. Granted, you've got one tester and you've got 300 developers or whatever, or some clearly mismatched thing. You probably need to bump up some capacity. But I've heard those complaints from organizations that have a tester-developer ratio of one tester per two developers.
Right.
That's a pretty high ratio, and they scream just as loudly as the ones that have seven developers to one tester. All right, batch economics.
Let's pull it back to the... So we've gone through the extreme view of
yep.
batches are horrible, batches are terrible, make smaller batches. So let's go ahead and pull it back into the realm of... Okay, now let's remember, we're taking this a step beyond the rhetoric. Batches have economics all in and of themselves,
yep.
and it is an optimization problem just like everything else. Optimizing batch sizes, you need to balance your transaction cost with the holding costs, right? So how much does it cost to pass a batch from dev to test? The deployment to that environment maybe costs you some money. The infrastructure to support the testing environment maybe costs you some money. So you have to balance that with the cost of delay of the things inside there. So can you trade some cycle time in order to create a bigger batch? So that's important to keep in mind is that this is, again, a U-shaped optimization where you need to be keeping those things in mind. And another important point is reducing the transaction cost will dramatically lower the optimal batch size. So if you can reduce the cost of the handoff from one stage to another, it will dramatically decrease the optimum batch size. So the cheaper it is for me to pass a penny from myself over to Steve, the smaller batches we should have. And we can drive, and you know, companies that deploy to production at the push of a button, they've driven that down to negligible cost. And so the transaction cost of going through all those phases to get into production is negligible, so they do it on a single piece flow. Depending upon your organization, that's probably not you, but it is important to understand that as you drive down those transaction costs, the optimal batch size greatly decreases. So you need to be revisiting what you think your optimal batch size is as you drive down those transaction costs. Somehow I think you're going to go ahead and put that on the whiteboard.
I'm going to draw it because we have, you know, we...
Because I just spoke through it, but drawing it's, you know, worth 1,000 words, right?
Well, and we haven't done a U-shaped optimization for like while, modules, right? Let's, for a long time.
Right.
So let's do that. If we have small batches all the way up to big batches, let's graph out our cost and let's do our transaction costs. Our transaction costs for small batches tend to be relatively high. And then over time, when we get to large batches, passing them is relatively low. So we have something that looks a lot like that. And it might even be linear.
Right.
Yep. And then we have you called it the holding costs.
Right.
How much does it cost to hold on to these things, right?
Right.
To just to not... In cost to the customer and things like that we talked about.
And we fortunately have cost of delay, right, to express this.
Yeah. Ah, thank you. Yes. Cost, the holding cost is cost of delay. And we draw that up and it might look something like that. And then in order to get our overall U-shaped cost, we add these things up and we get something that looks like that, giving us our optimal size. Now, what you mentioned is this cost of delay here
is pretty static.
Pretty static.
It's determined by your customers.
Yeah.
You don't really have a lot of control over that one.
No. So this is going to be hard to change. But if you can drive down your transaction costs here, you can do much smaller batches. Again, this is nothing different than we did earlier where we said, let's release more effectively, right? Let's automate some of our releases. If we're able to drive that one to look something like this, where there's not much transaction holding cost, the economics of this changes very dramatically, and it looks, our U-shaped curves look something like that, right? I'm probably off on something there, but you can see we've moved from here all the way down to here, allowing us to ship more quickly.
Right.
Yeah, good.
I would also like to point out that I'm not actually going to draw in here, but this is one of the few U-shaped optimizations that tends to have very steep sides. So this U-shape, Steve, I only want to point this out because we drew it up. So Steve drew one that changing the batch size has very little effect over here. These tend to be much more like this.
Much
steeper. Where these lines are getting closer to the optimal batch size is fairly important.
Yeah.
You don't want to be, the difference between a 3-month batch and a 1-month batch is quite drastic in most cases.
That's a good point.
So know that this is one of the U-shapes. It's still U-shaped where, you know, maybe this is the difference between 1 week and 2 weeks. But it is more important to be closer to accurate in batch sizes.
Right. And you'll know it. You'll probably feel it quite
right.
a bit as you get towards those batch size limits.
When in doubt, go smaller.
Exactly.
Just to call that out before we go further. If you don't know what to do, they're too big. Go smaller.
Yep, exactly. And that brings us back to culture flag on this one, which is basically this is where we start to see these batch size arguments occur in companies. If there is a lack of trust between the development and business teams, very often that manifests itself as large batches of work. Why? Because business... feels like every time that they get an okay from dev to build something, it's a one shot. This is their one chance to get everything in there. So they pack all sorts of features in as requirements when they're really not required at all. And they're going to slow down the overall development effort. And that happens because of lack of trust. This is a place where trust between dev and business or between IT and business really needs to be established so that you can reduce batch sizes.
Yep.
Of course, to your point, it's a relationship thing.
Yep.
The more you reduce batch sizes, the more feedback they get, and you prove that you can deliver this stuff, better off you are.
This is something that you have to be very careful about incentivizing in your organizations. I'll bring it back to my time in the military. I was very exposed to my shop's budget, right? So we had a certain amount of budget. We could spend X amount of dollars every, I think it was quarterly. This low trust organization that we were in with the budget making authorities meant that whether we actually needed to buy stuff or not, right, we spent our entire budget, because if we didn't, we were going to get a smaller budget the next time. So we were incentivized to perpetuate that lack of trust. And in organizations that have been performing in a waterfall manner, you've been incentivizing that for a long time. That lack of trust has been incentivized over and over and over again. If you don't get it into this release, you're not going to get it for 2 years.
It is, right? A budget problem. Oh, my goodness. I'm hoping that nobody out there experiences budgets like that. But my guess is that that's exactly how your organization budgets and behaves to those budgets, because they feel like if they don't spend that money now, they won't ever get it in the following ones. It's, again, that lack of trust.
Yep.
The lack of small batches. Ooh. That's a good example.
You only approve it,
Yeah, love that example.
And just not you haven't decentralized that. You haven't published the important information.
Nope.
There's no tie back to delivery of value. A lot of the things that we talk about play into that as well.
Yep. All right, that was batch sizes and batches of work. Very related to work in process limits, and slightly related to variability, but not as tightly to variability as to WIP limits. Andrew, this is another one of these that we could talk for ages, but do you think we've covered enough?
This one, I think we have. I think we've driven the message of you really need to make smaller batches. let me give a shout out to the Scrum and Iterative Development movement. They have made leaps and bounds in the software field. WIP limits, we haven't tackled so much as an industry. However, batch sizes as an industry, we've begun to recognize the damage that they have on our systems. And if you want to know why iterations work and why iterative development works, batch size is the core of it. It forces you to reduce your batch size to a manageable level. And Scrum and the iterative community have gone leaps and bounds in this direction.
I agree.
I just want to give them a nice shout out. Good job.
Yep, good job.
Thanks, guys.
Huge kudos to the Scrum and Agile teams out there. All right, let's wrap this one. This finishes up some of our practices sections, leading to one big practice, which is Kanban itself. And Kanban is kind of the tool that can help wrap all of these things together and expose our high WIP limits, visualize our batch sizes, reduce our overall work in process, see what variation does to our systems. All these things can be exposed once we get to a visualization like Kanban. And that's coming up next. We'll see you in 10 minutes.